Welcome back, everyone, to the show for The Love of Cinema, a movie podcast where our motto is, we just hope it doesn't suck. This is episode 378B. There we go. I love to hear that sound. The second episode for the week, we will now discuss our thoughts on Society of the Snow. With you for that discussion, Grayson Maxwell, Roger Stone, and the lovely Christopher Bond. For the episode discussing Monkey Man, including the whole box office breakdown, what's streaming, and trailer talk, check out episode 378A, posted on Tuesday, 4/16. Well, boys, we are a little bit late to Society of the Snow, but it was nominated for some awards.
Sure.
And it is, I'm happy to say, it is very good movie from Netflix.
I watched this movie with my 6-year-old today, so there's that.
Oh God!
Wait, really?
How many questions
did she have?
Listen,
thousands.
It's not quite.
I have a bunch of questions, by the way.
It's not quite that bad. So, like, I had limited time to see this movie, so like, I threw it on today, and
we're recording on a Sunday, by the way.
Yeah. So she's in the same room as me, not watching the movie with me. But
that's
like,
probably for the best.
At some point, something horrendous happens in this, and people start screaming. And I hear behind me her voice go, "Daddy, what's that?" I went, pause. Oh, you can't be in here. Like, everything dawned on me, because then I read the synopsis of the movie. I was like, oh. So we're gonna change the seating arrangement here. So yeah.
That makes the most sense, I think. So let's look at some particulars. The tomato meter. Have you guys seen the tomato meter on this bad boy?
I haven't looked.
No, I haven't looked at all. I bet it's high as shit, though.
Oh, it's got to be.
90%. Yep. Audience score, 88%. So it's very close. Yeah.
Does that mean 88% of America is good with eating your friends?
Maybe. It could be. And
what's the depression score on this movie?
Yeah. Depression quite
high.
96% on the depresso-meter.
Depresso.
The Metacritic, this is also very favorably high. It's 72.
That's about right.
Which, after you hit 70, going up even a point is a big deal, I think.
That's a big fucking deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get into it then. Gentlemen, shall we? Now, as I said before, it was up for some Oscars during the recent Oscar season. I don't think it won, though.
It did not win.
Yeah, I have it written here. Did not win, but let's talk about it. But let's get some particulars out of the way. All right, just name a few names.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, Tom Wolfe, Diego Vegezzi, Enzo Vakencentric. I'm sorry, these names, I cannot pronounce
the
names.
Better you than me.
Yeah. A lot of people well known in the Spanish region of the world.
This is a Spanish foreign film.
Yeah,
by
this
way.
Is a foreign flick.
So let me ask. I'll lead it off. Did you guys watch this in Spanish with subtitles or dubbed?
Original subtitles.
I watched it dubbed.
Did
this
you?
Time. Well, my wife was watching it with me.
Okay.
She preferred that.
Gotcha.
I put it on and I was like, "Hey, this is dubbed." She goes, "Okay." And then like 35 seconds of the movie, she's like, "Their mouth is lying." I go, "Yeah, baby, we talked."
Yeah. So
she goes, "Oh yeah."
So let me bring you back.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Directed by J.A. Bayona. I'll come back to this in a second, but you know what? I did do a few times, and I went after I, because I kind of had a good time with it, because you know how like
a fun family film.
Yep,
we talked about this with one of last year's nominations with All Quiet on the Western Front, the remake. You could watch it.
Excellent movie, by the way.
Excellent movie. You could watch it in the original German track, or you could watch it in English dub. Mm-hmm. And so I went. I chose, because that was difficult, because not as difficult as what I'm about to say is, so I chose to not only watch it on a different, I chose to watch it, some of it in German. I chose to watch some of it in another language, but like, so that's twice off, because not only is the mouth not moving to anything,
but I also
don't understand anything. Like and I know they're not speaking the language of the people talking either.
Why would you do that?
But I went back, and after I had
psychotic behavior.
I had a few giggles doing that, but I went back and started from the beginning. I also watched it in the native language. I did not watch it dubbed.
Yeah. You almost have to watch it, watch All Quiet on the Western Front in German, because then everyone's angrier the whole time.
German's an angry language, man. Everyone's always yelling when they say it.
It's a passionate language, sir.
It is. Fair enough. But I agree with you. I think the right way to watch this the first time is in the original voice tracks. So I did that, and it does, you know, for a lot of people don't like that, but a lot of people don't mind reading subtitles. It's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's just really not.
I watch anime, bro. It's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me one bit.
I have subtitles on all the time anyway for my mom.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and I'm like that too. Whenever
there
I can't have
there are plenty
have
of people like that.
Yep.
So
also,
Roger,
I'm convinced if you don't like subtitles, you just can't read fast.
Or at all.
Or read it all.
You are an illiterate son of a bitch.
Question everything. Trust nothing.
Roger, what is Society of the Snow about?
Yeah.
So this is actually an easy one because this is a true story of a South African rugby team that crash lands in the Andes Mountains Uruguayan rugby team that crash lands in the Andes on their way to Santiago, Chile. So only about 10 minutes out from their landing zone as well,
which is a travesty in its own
right. Well, so here's the thing. Apparently, like, back in the day, like, those mountains were notoriously treacherous for that because planes couldn't go quite as high as they could now. And with the turbulence and downdraft was a real problem. And the way Santiago, Chile is, it really is just out of the mountain range right onto the ocean side. Yep. So, yeah, not great for them. They get stranded there for 70-plus days.
72. God.
And,
Wasn't it in 1972 or 73?
1972.
Okay, yeah. You'd think, just a question, so somewhere in the film they do mention that 34 flights at that point had gone down and no survivors were ever found.
Yeah.
You'd think they would, like, okay.
Stop flying here.
We need to chart a different route.
Well, not necessarily just stop. Like, what Grayson said, though, I think is true. Like, hey, maybe we shouldn't try to cut through that mountain pass anymore. Let's just avoid it. I don't care if it adds 7 hours.
You gotta avoid that.
Give me two layovers and a flight change, please.
So, I mean, it was nice how it got all the way to the beautiful, beautiful tomb. Like, it was great.
Jesus.
It was great.
Yeah, so like, so this movie doesn't take long to get going. And keep in mind, I had no idea what I was in for until things started happening. So, like, I was like, you know, watching this, they're all talking about it. They get in the plane. I'm like, all right, this is fine. And then like, things started going like sideways. I was like, is this fucking plane gonna crash, bro? This plane fucking crashes. And no matter what the budget for this movie is, they didn't skimp on the plane crash. Nope. Like, there's plenty of movies that have plane crashes in it where like you see quick cuts of shit that happens. Not this. They like fold legs into halves,
which is great.
Quarters, and they like linger the shot there for a whole second to let you see the
with
shape,
the extra crunchy noise.
Yeah, to let you see the shape of the tetra shaped leg now. So it's like there's just so many shots of this as the plane. Some guy gets stabbed with the arm of a chair.
Yep.
Oh, like there's just so much here in that. In that 2 minute segment, it's like, holy shit.
So, like I mentioned a minute ago, this is a true story.
Yeah.
This is actually an adaptation of a book that was written in conjunction with a couple of the survivors. Mm-hmm. So the thing that makes me, because like this happened, came out on the 50th anniversary of them being rescued.
Mm-hmm.
That's when this actually came out was released on Netflix, I guess. So the detail of the plane crash, like, is probably as accurate as they could make it.
Probably.
Because, like, they show things, like Chris mentioned, that you don't normally see in a plane crash. Like, they get extra deep into the carnage for whatever reason. And, like, look, we see worse shit in this movie by a long shot.
Yeah.
But it was, like, it was a bit jarring. And I hate to be like, oh, the plane crash is what weirded me out about this movie.
Well, it's
brutal.
There's something viscerally terrifying about a plane crash, though, right? Because it's that one situation that you put yourself,
assume you're dead.
That you put yourself in that you have zero control over.
Absolutely.
That is when things go as bad as they can. Like, your chances of survival are literally like less than 1%.
Yeah,
right?
It's low.
It's insane. And I fly to travel for, you know, a lot of times when I do. It's like
I'm flying internationally in like 4 weeks.
So. Yeah, see, it's like I don't think of this film as you fly. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
no. Like,
it's Bad News Bears, but it's. I think that's why the plane crash scene, even though all the other things we see in this, it can be hard for somebody to watch because it's like, you know, again, you have no control in that situation. Everything else that happens afterwards, while out of their control in the situation that they're in, everything else is a choice after that, right? You know,
I don't know. They get put up against some elemental things that is completely
a couple times, but at the same time. Okay, most of the things that happen, it's all by choices.
Sure.
When they go out places, what they go out with, what they prepare themselves for.
Yeah, their preparation.
Things that they kind of just pull the trigger on and probably should, hey, don't do that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But then the movie takes on a whole different tone when a very specific detail becomes not even the, it becomes the highlight for about 20 minutes, right? Where, spoiler alert, you know, they have to decide if they're going to start eating.
So they're out of food, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, okay, so let me, before we get to there, I'll go right back to you in a second.
Yeah, you're good.
So here's the thing, this plane crashes, right? And at first, like, there's a good bit of survivors,
yeah,
right? Like, we're in our 30s, mm-hmm, for the amount of people that survived, all right?
Yeah.
That is not the amount of people that get rescued by a long shot.
It's not.
Because they are there for so long, they basically have to, they call it the Society of the Snow, because, like, they have to learn, like, what to do. Like, they're in an inhospitable place, mm-hmm, right? And just remember, they are in the Southern Hemisphere, so, like, they are coming out of winter, going into their summer, into spring and summer at this time, because they crash land in October, and it's just horrible down there, because, like, that is about peak winter, mm-hmm, there.
Well, if I could just interject for one.
Which is important to know, by the way.
If I could just interject for one line that the movie does draw your attention to is there's a moment when one of them walks out of the fuselage that they've taken shelter in, and he looks up. I think it's the narrator who then says, "Life isn't possible here."
Yeah, yeah.
And that's very important, because, like, it isn't. Like, there's no way you could possibly.
It's a beautiful tomb.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a gorgeous place to die.
He also says something along the lines of the only thing out of place, the only thing out of place here is us.
Yep.
And it's a good line, actually.
But yeah, so, I mean, this is what brings it to, like, hey, you know, they're okay with water, because, like, there's snow everywhere. Yeah. I mean, they are freezing, but it must not be completely inhospitable, because you do get some folks early on that freeze to death, especially anybody that was, like, severely injured after, mm-hmm, the plane crash. I think they lose almost as many people in the first 3 days as they lose the rest of the way out after that.
Yeah.
Because, like, people freeze to death. We get the unfortunate part of later on of an avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
That really does some real terrible stuff to their morale.
Yeah. The avalanche, I think, is probably...
You want to talk about, like, you couldn't, you didn't think... It, me. You want to talk about, like, a scene that you're like, it can't possibly get any worse.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it can.
They do that movie thing
twice.
They do that movie thing where everything's going okay. You know what I mean? So
it's not the worst.
Yeah. But, like, no, the avalanche scene comes in at, like, I don't know. That's almost, like, the worst thing that happens to them, I think.
After the plane crash.
Yeah, after the plane crash, obviously. Like, that's almost the worst thing. Because, like, again, they had a system. They had some shit going on that they had to do.
They were surviving.
Yeah, exactly. So,
they weren't thriving.
No. But not by any means. But, like, they felt like they were going to, like, make it for a time, right? And it's, like, all of a sudden that all comes crashing down because the mountain literally comes down on them, yeah.
But like Chris said, so somebody actually brings it up during the... talking about, you know, the 3 minute rule. You can go 3 minutes without air, you can go 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food.
Yeah.
So they don't quite make it 3 weeks, but they get to about day 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And, like, they're out of food, they're starving, their bodies are shutting down on them. Like, the one guy's like, I went to piss today and it's black.
Yep.
Like, they're dying, right? They are literally dying. Mm-hmm. And they get the idea, like, hey, you know, there's plenty of protein, mm-hmm, around here and some frozen dead bodies.
Yep.
And there's a lot of dissension, a lot of discussion.
Well here's the thing about that is being in the time period in the part of the world, it would have been very Catholic.
It
becomes a deeply religious argument, like, hey, if we do this, you know, they won't go to heaven, we won't go to heaven. And, like, look, hey, I'm not a religious guy, I've never pretended to be. I would kind of been like, hey, we should eat these bros, but...
Well, it comes... I appreciate the heavy religious tone in this film, because, it's accurate.
Well, that's the thing. It absolutely would have been something that they must have been dealing with.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and ultimately they make the decision to start, you know, they have a group of people that are... There's two of them that are handling the heavy work, I guess, of picking out who, and then...
Yeah.
I hate to use the word dismantling, but, like, butchering them into edible pieces. Yeah. And
it was the two doctors, right? The two med students.
The two pre-med guys. Yeah. Yeah. The cousins.
Yeah.
Who were the cousins. And they were handling it because, you know, they're slightly more qualified than, mm-hmm, I guess.
Than everybody else.
But yeah, And after a little bit, like, some stuff starts to turn around, and then basically everybody has to make the decision to go down this path. And
well, what happens is they fix a radio.
Yep.
And then they learn that.
Well, they find a portable radio.
Well, they found.
Oh, I guess they did.
They had to fix it though. Yeah.
Right.
And then after they fix it, they hear shortly after that they're stopping.
Calling off the search.
Yeah, they're calling off the search for until everything thaws. So it's like all of a sudden it's like, you know, well, I thought we had more time kind of deal. So the people that didn't partake
have
in
been reluctant.
Yeah, the people that hadn't partaken in the human buffet now it's like, well, okay, it's going to be way longer than we thought. We can't hold out any further if we want to survive.
Like, we will die.
Yeah. And everyone that's currently alive does decide to partake in the protein consumption.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal because you didn't have like that single person or like those two holdouts die of starvation,
no.
Right? That's not what happens here. No. The thing that, you know, like they all kind of, all right, this is how we as a group move forward from here.
Yeah, if anybody's going to survive, this is what we're going to have to do.
Yep.
I mean, basically they have like this little weird round table going on. I was like, you guys have my permission if I die to do it.
Yeah.
And there's some real moments, you know, because we get to somebody, because like eventually a couple other people just succumb to injury and infection. And one of the last things the guy says coherently to the other guy is like, you have my permission to do this.
And he was the longest holdout too.
Yes.
So,
well, here's where I think some of the beauty of it comes into is how it's shot. And in the, I think the tone in which some of the conversations are handled pacing wise, I think is some of the beautiful filmmaking here is it works because it's real.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And well,
it really does feel like they're a close knit group because they are a rugby team. Like it felt like we spent a lot of time together. We know each other. And I mean, everybody thinks they know somebody. Like you've never sat across from somebody after a plane crash debating on whether you should eat your dead friend.
Yeah.
Like legitimately, you've never had that conversation.
And like,
before.
Well,
a lot of people haven't had that conversation.
It's not even just friends though. Like, a lot of them are.
Well, there's other
with
people
family.
In their family on there.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's not even, you know, like, you know, hey, I'm going to eat my friend.
That's right. Nando does say he's like, you have my permission because like,
yeah.
his sister had passed away.
Mother and sister
were on that same flight and they hadn't, you know, eating them yet.
Yep.
They're like, you have my permission
to
do so just to help keep
everybody
going.
One of the things that I was really kind of impressed with was you know who, so there's a narrator. Usually you expect the narrator because he's narrating. Well,
to make
I mean,
it out.
But I really liked the kind of flip the script on you is as soon as that happened, that was the last thing that person said was, I died on, I think it was October something, 1972. And then now we didn't hear anymore from that narrator.
Weeks out.
Yeah, he almost made it.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I like because you expected the narrator to make it. And that's one of the interesting things is
when the narrator dies is when they launch their final expedition out. Yeah.
And I like do you know, odd, Roger, and you may get this more than Chris, I think, is a lot of the stuff in this, you know what it reminded me of? This is going to be a weird call. It is Apollo 13. And hear me out.
Isolated and try to figure stuff out.
Yeah, well, like, because Apollo 13 does a really good job of, because everything goes wrong, and they have zero hope of making it back. And the movie does a really good job, and like, I think it has a really good scene. I think Kevin Bacon is the one who's just like, I give up. I'm done. We're dead. And
I remember what it was is when they're doing a calculation.
Yeah.
In that movie when they didn't equate for somebody else's oxygen consumption with the CO2 thing. And he's like, oh yeah, I guess I'll just hold my breath.
Wasn't there a stowaway or something on that?
No. On Apollo 13, it's when the rocket booster thing blows up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And it's like the absolute
excellent movie, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, Academy Award winner anyway. In every way. That's the absolute just hopeless. I'm done. Like, it's just, I think this movie captured that well, especially the isolation of making you feel like they were, like, these people are stuck there forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing this movie does do well is depression.
Bleak as. Well, it's one of those movies that, like, I don't know. So I was thinking I was gonna have to scrub this movie, like scrub through it, like not like give it like the full watch and just kind of like jump from scene to scene to like,
wait,
the
why
idea of it. Why? Just because like the time I had available and, oh, and like, you know, like
his kids,
yeah, my kid was there and stuff, so yeah, so it was like, but like I was able to watch the I couldn't not watch it, like I couldn't bring myself to it because I was like, okay, this is like really shitty, but this is really good.
It's good,
yeah. So it was like, you know, it was really well done. The acting was fantastic. The emotion was real, and like a lot of that, it just like, I don't know. They never turn on each other, right? Like they have some arguments, right?
You know, yeah, they never go at each other.
But like, there's not a single like the thing you expect to happen in like a movie that's like dramatizing something is like, you know, two of the people have a fight and one of them accidentally kills a guy.
Yeah, you always assume it devolves into Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah, always. Yeah, legitimately, yes. And it's like, it doesn't. And that almost feels good, you know what I mean, in like a movie like this.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and like another thing is, I think this is good and feels very authentic. I found out they shot a lot of this on site.
Oh yeah,
yeah. They traveled to the exact spot of where this happened, and they shot the film there. They had a base camp.
Jesus,
they lived out there and they shot the movie there.
I didn't know that, but I mean, they also had
nuts
temperature controlled things there to hop in and out of at times.
No, they weren't fucking rough.
They didn't crash the plane when they went to shoot the movie.
All right, guys, here we go, and
you guys crash. Atomic thunder! This bitch just sent him into the jungle. Fucking figure it out.
Yeah, no,
that guy. We set up stationary cameras to watch you.
I think there's a lot to say to that though, because like
that's cool.
That's big
dedication.
Yeah, well, because like. All the actors that were in this, I think the majority of them, like, they probably know the story. Like, sure. This is probably something that is talked about, you know, within, like, you know, a cultural circle at some point, mm-hmm. like, between some of these actors. So I think it's a piece of it is authenticity, but another piece is probably paying it the respect it's due.
Sure.
You know, especially being, like, that 50-year mark, mm-hmm. and stuff. So just details that I respect when I hear them, because it's, you know, it's outside the norm for things like that to happen, and I think it's interesting when it does.
So well, it's an incredible tale of survival. As
so
well.
Yeah, like this is an excellent movie, but so this is not the first time this movie has been semi-adapted.
No,
so
in 1993, one, right?
There was a lot of changes to it, but like this concept was the same. Was the movie Alive?
Yeah, in 93, yeah, that was it.
Which is about a South American rugby team or South African rugby team,
okay,
crashing. Same general story. They end up, you know, having to eat each other and that sort of stuff. But, you know, this digs into it a little bit deeper. And, you know, I think I'm better for watching this movie. Like, look, this is not a fun ride.
No, I never want to watch this again.
Yeah, no. It's really not that. But
well,
like,
let me ask, will you ever watch All Quiet on the Western Front again?
I haven't.
But would you? I mean, you just said you won't watch this again. Would you watch All Quiet?
I don't think I would.
Okay.
Because well, like, I don't know if it's not because I don't value that movie and don't think it's good. Again, though, it's fucking brutal too.
Yeah,
it is.
I think I'm in the same camp. I think so. I like sad movies.
Sure,
you know,
nothing
and
wrong
like,
with
like,
that.
Like, I think they're probably the thing that always affect me the most, and it's probably because of that emotion behind it. But like, I think the difference between like this movie and a movie like All Quiet on the Western Front compared to like my favorite piece of media, Chernobyl. Chernobyl is fictionalized.
It's a fun family film.
It's fictionalized in a lot of ways around a true event, though. So like,
sure.
Going back to watch that, you know, I know all of that didn't happen to those people. Watching those the other two things I just named, Western Front and now this, that's a lot to have in like in your mental capacity to think
pretty
about,
accurate,
you know,
description of stuff that really happened.
Yeah,
to
and with some imagery for like modern day imagery that they can do with that, like some of the stuff in this movie, like seeing the literally picked down to the actual bone corpses just, like, of people that they know, not just ribs, there's fucking skulls and shit laying around. Like it's like
yeah, they ate everything. Yeah,
yeah, to know that they ate every scrap they could of just, you know, alive, of the people around them, and then like just have it laying out this is life right now for us, to where in the photos they're like haphazardly covering the shit up because it's like it's just so natural to them at that point.
It's just part of life.
That's fucking wild, dude. And
they would have smelled so fucking bad too.
No, I don't think they would have.
Cold, it didn't. It
yeah, rot. I don't think they would have smelled at all.
When it started to thaw, maybe
get a little bit warmer. Yeah.
But at the same time, they stink.
Sure,
you know
what
I mean?
That's what I mean. Like you have a grime on you.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
So I thought about this, and I don't mean this to be like funny, but So think about towards the end, like when like we're going towards rescue, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When the two guys they meet the yep. guy hiking or you with his horse.
Imagine that guy just shoots him, right? Fuck.
Damn it. But so like they're back at his little like cabin shanty thing and like they're eating like this bowl of stew.
Oh yeah,
and,
just like, fucking he just, dipping no, in bread.
He just dips his big old hunk of bread and just like sinks his teeth in it. I can't imagine how fucking delicious
that would taste.
That had to have been
when he eats when the narrator eats the chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Oh right, like, he's like no, not the rapper, not the rapper.
Yeah, yeah, the guy's like no, don't do that. But like the way he eats that, just I know that feeling,
yeah.
You know, because like not comparing what I've done to the I fasted for like 5 days before.
How many people
right?
have you eaten?
I've fasted for 5 days before, right? And like. That first bite you take when you break your fast, doesn't matter what it is, it's like, oh, that's good. Like, it's just plain-ass bread and, like, a small piece of meat. It's like, oh, this yes. is so fucking good. Like, I think it could be charred to fucking ash, and it's like, no. yes, give me that right. Yeah, like, same thing. And it's like, that emotion, like, that, like it was just captured so well. Like you said, they're just, like, dipping that honking piece of bread. They threw up. Like, oh, right afterwards. They didn't give a shit. You know what I mean? They ate it again.
The other thing that I thought about, too, was, like, imagine standing in that hot shower.
Oh.
Or just, like, when the guys...
Never
sit, when the two of them, are the guys are in there together,
yeah.
they're just sitting on the floor, just, yep. like, crying, oh, like, so happy.
Yeah.
Like, how sad it, like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Like, because, like, look, you're cold to the fucking core.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
colder than you've ever been in your life.
For fucking 70-plus days.
Yeah.
It's and with, not only that, without any kind of hope, without any nothing...
Grayson, how long would you have survived?
Oh, yeah. I would have been dead quick. All right, let's get that out of the way.
Do you think?
Mr. Ryan survived a zombie
yeah, but,
apocalypse?
Yeah, but you got the zombie apocalypse locked down pat?
That's D. yes. okay, good question.
That's maybe very telling. That's very telling.
I just don't
Nobody
do well
with... Here's pants are on fire.
I don't do well with cold weather. I
can't, oh, okay, okay. So when the zombie apocalypse kicks off in the wintertime, you're done. Got well, it, I mean, okay. He'll make it the
so
worst.
If you're stranded in the Andes, lower survival chance.
This,
yeah, yeah.
It's an accurate statement.
So not the same as like some of the carnage we talked about on Monkey Man and some of the Wick films past, but what got me was when those three came back after that like first expedition up the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that one guy's eyes were frozen.
Yeah.
So he had to wear he had to wear something over his like a bandana over his face.
Oh yeah, snowblind yeah. baby.
Oh and yeah, like, snowblind's real.
They
happened to Luke Skywalker.
And then one of them was chewing the food and giving it to him, mm-hmm. and then like putting it. And then he touched his teeth, and his teeth were like malleable.
Yeah,
yeah, like that. Oh man, I can't imagine the kind of pain that goes with that.
Dude, lack of nutrition will do some fucked up shit to your body.
Yeah, but that's the thing is like I kept returning to is at least they have water. At least they have.
Well, sure. Well, here's the thing: if they didn't have the snow,
yeah.
If they didn't have the snow, they would have all been dead.
Exactly.
Like, you would have never seen.
Yep.
There would be no movie about this.
Yep.
They would have been a tomb in the Andes somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is, like, without that's not a thing without snow because, like, there was snow. So that's one thing. Like, they did have not an unlimited supply of food, but a lot of bodies, and they had.
Yeah. I mean, they had enough.
Okay, that's the only thing I want to bring up is that the one thing that everyone did when this film first came out, I didn't know anything about this. I didn't know the true life event. I had no idea. But they're like, oh, those are the people that ate their friends. I'm like, oh, that's a weird thing to make a movie
it's
about.
A weird thing to say. That's yeah. a weird way to pitch this to me. You know
yeah,
what
yeah.
mean?
But one I thought, especially with the narration and with how the conversations went with one another, I really thought it was tastefully done, and it wasn't too gory, it wasn't gross, none of it, because they treated it with respect, which I think sure. was a nod to the source material, like a nod to the survivors who made it through the ordeal.
Well, yeah,
I think they treated it with an incredible amount of respect. How they went about that part of the film with people eating bodies is well, they didn't you know they weren't gory with it. They just the
well,
brothers,
no, but
the two cousins did it behind. No one knew. There was no face to the person. Nothing. You just mm-hmm. ate little scraps to stay alive.
Well, I think even more so. It's not so much as like you know, like they were respectful and like by not making it gory, but like it's probably accurate to the way it happened for them. Don't forget, like everything's frozen. You know, like yep. so, there's you know, you're and some of that had been sitting there for a little bit, so you're not gonna have you know blood and blood flow and all that other shit. It's like it's they're going to. Like what they did and the minuscule amount that they ate at a time to make it last, it's probably around that, you know, like around that look and feel, because they probably tried to stay as close to, you know, real as they could, again, to pay respect. The other thing is, you talked about, like, you know, at least they had water. Imagine at least having water being the snow that's also at the same time killing you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
well, snow is killing
you. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, it's like that snow is killing you, but it's also giving you the sustenance you need to possibly survive. It's like, God, that's a dichotomy on its own.
Well,
on
its one of the things too, if you are in a survival situation, you're not really supposed to eat snow unless you absolutely have to.
Oh yeah.
Because it takes like 50 times more calories to heat that, heat that up.
So heat you up,
consume it. Yep. Yeah. It's like, it actually is a detriment in the short term.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to melt it to get the right.
Really?
Out of it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Does that apply also if you drink like super cold water in the morning or something?
Yes.
I mean, in the morning.
I mean, that's the difference thing. You're not eating it. Listen, if you ate a handful of ice cubes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't consider that. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's. But over. So let's talk about. So this is Netflix. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the look of it and the feel of it. Is most Netflix films don't look and feel this good. And I mean by, like, this actually looked like it was meant to be. It was shot with the highest quality. It was a lot of Netflix films, they all look polished and too clean and crisp. And
this didn't movie, look like that. I mean, this movie looks unique in the fact that it looks gritty.
So
it's shot that way on purpose,
though. I want to bring up,
yeah, of course,
something real quick, because this is a Spanish film, made not. I don't mean just in Spanish. I mean made from in Spain, or from a Spanish production company. Do you guys remember Bird Box Barcelona?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same kind of gritty feel to it. So, like, look, we don't see a whole lot of movies from Spain itself.
It might just be their, like,
their
shooting standard.
Yeah,
kind
like
of thing.
I don't know, and I don't want to say it, but it did remind me heavily of that style.
However, sweeping shots definitely looked high quality, like
drone,
like,
footage.
Yeah, like 4K stuff. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It did. It looked great, and it didn't. It's a shame that we're surprised when we get a good Netflix film. We shouldn't be. The bad ones.
No,
I want to be
happy when I see.
Yeah. Well, the thing, I mean, the bad ones.
You could be watching this movie, I guess.
The bad ones should be the things that, like, oh well. Every once in a while,
you get a
bad one. You know, it shouldn't be. Oh, every once in a while, you get a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I understand that. I really do, but. I think this is a big win, especially for Netflix, especially, you know, congratulations on the nominations and everything. But I think this is a very solid film. And to be honest, I had no idea what was going into it. Even after it won nominated and we watched it, I still really didn't have the idea what it was about. And it gets into it pretty quick. There's not much lead up time to
20 minutes.
There's maybe a few before the plane crash.
20 minutes and 22 minutes and some seconds, because that's when I paused it and looked at my daughter and
told
her to get out.
That's fair, because still, yes. 22 minutes isn't enough to, like, start the film, do the opening, you know, produced by this and this company, and then introduce all the characters. Like, it just doesn't seem like enough time to do that. It's what they somehow made it work. What I also appreciated was when they gave you the names and the ages of the people. Yeah. That's just that little detail, Roger, I think that you talk about that makes movies something, like, more believable for that aspect of, like, it just gives you that much more of a detail that the level of detail is nice.
How about the guy that wouldn't leave without the briefcase at the end?
Yeah.
Because they went and
they had all the mementos of the people that were dead.
Yeah. I guess they told him that too. Like that was an account that actually happened, and he refused to leave without it. So they finally let him do it. But it was just because of weight concerns.
Sure.
The same thing that, like, you know.
Didn't you think it was wild that for like 18 people or 17 people or so, they sent two choppers?
Yeah.
Yes. I was like, we doing this in rotations? Yeah. Like, who's gonna be like, you know what?
Yeah,
I'll fucking
get me on the next pass.
Yeah, and I'll be good. I'm good. He's like, get me the fuck out of here.
I'll hang off the bottom of this.
Get me out of here. Yeah, that's. I did think that was weird. But would two choppers have fit 16, 17 people?
I mean, must.
I mean,
have.
Sure.
I don't know why they would.
Yeah, that would be the thing.
Scrub
that
detail. Yeah.
That's a weird detail to scrub. But I did like because, I mean, that's the whole thing that made me think of, I love this movie, and I know, Roger, you're not a huge fan of it, The Gray.
No, it's whatever.
It made me think of the wallets of they were collecting the whole way on there just to remember people. And then, of course, you have that scene in the end with Liam stacking the wallets and looking at all of them. I love that movie. I think that movie, I don't know. I don't think that movie's great. I love to listen to it because I love Liam's voice. I love Frank Grillo and the other people in it, but it's a nice thing to listen to. Also depressing, very depressing. It's about a man who doesn't kill himself in the beginning and then somehow finds a way to the end. But it reminded me of that. I like the whole thing with collecting mementos of people, and it's just these kind of stories I really enjoy because it's something that goes against everything about living, defying the odds. This story in an odd way is very like uplifting. As depressing as it is, it's very uplifting in a way.
It's a very human story.
It is. Well, they're eating humans too, so.
Yes. Wow.
You had to go there, didn't you?
I did.
Well, one of us fucking jokes today.
Jesus.
One of us is going to go there. Might as well be me. Is there anything you guys didn't like about this one?
Nah, not really.
It's like, this is common with with most of the Oscar films that we like talking about, right? There's not much that I can point to that I was like, yeah, actually they could have done this better or they should have done this different. There's a reason why they're nominated most of the time. And it's like, I can't think of something that's glaringly obvious to me that like it went wrong. Like they even handle like the smaller characters. Like everybody has their moment, like as you like go forward with the story in this. And even that was done really well. So I think this movie's pretty well made. I can't imagine like looking at this and changing anything in it. You know what I mean? So no, not my opinion.
Nope.
There's nothing I would have. Because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. I'm sure they saw it a lot, and because it's a lot of it was, especially with the people who were alive, some of them still alive today that were involved with this. I think there's probably a lot of detail that didn't make it into the film, simply because the runtime maybe didn't allow for it.
It is fairly long, so
it's 2.5, and that's without trailers. So it's a long movie. But I don't think there's anything I would have changed. I would like to know what's on the cutting room floor. What little details didn't make it in? Because like you said, the guy refusing to leave.
Yeah, probably less human shots.
Less human what?
Less human remain shots, things like that too. Just like,
sure.
As tasteful as possible.
But why would you have shot it if you didn't? I mean, that's something that I don't think anybody would have even shot.
Because I think you can agree more than anybody. Like you shoot something and then when you look at it, you know, when you look at it like as like completed, it might not like resonate the same way as like when it's edited together with something else. You know, it's like, ooh,
I totally get that.
Maybe we don't leave this in frame quite that long. Maybe we don't show this one right after it. We show this kind of deal, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But before we move to school, you know, one thing I did think was going to happen, and only because it happened once before in the film, is I didn't know how many people made it out, and the film didn't tell you going into it.
Yeah.
I really thought when those two made it back, you remember they're talking to the guy on the horse and they get back and then they tell them where to go find their friends. You remember that scene when we see that like they're doing their hair the best they can, they're getting ready to
rescue.
I really did think there was going to be another avalanche and then it was going to tell you only two survivors.
Jesus. No, it doesn't go that dark. Fuck.
Wow. There was no way I thought when you heard the fuselage rumbling, it was like, is that a fucking avalanche? These people are stuck in the mountains and like, is this going to get worse? And it did twice.
Yep.
So I figured, well, wouldn't that be just a cherry on top if another avalanche hit with everything melting and the snow then shifting and then.
I wonder if they were actually clapping when the avalanche happened. So like they've, you know, maybe they're the ones that caused it to begin with. That'd be fucked.
I don't think you're supposed to think that way, but I think that was.
That's what I think. I think, oh no, they caused it, and it was like, now everyone's dead again. Oh no.
Shit.
Yeah.
But I also did like the pictures at the end that they did very, very faithfully recreate in the film.
That's a good job.
Yes. Like I said, you can tell there was a lot of respect paid to this.
Yeah, there's passion in it.
Yeah, it's...
And the cinematography was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, just beautiful.
It's like I said, like, this is probably something that's culturally talked about, you know, like... Amongst some of the people that were part of this, that's like,
I mean, locally we still talk about the Marshall football plane crash, and that's been almost 50 years ago.
Yep.
So
yeah,
God, it really was. It was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I like that movie. No one else does, but I listen to that movie a lot.
Lots of people like that movie.
Yeah, We Are Marshall. Yeah, that's so. Let's move to score then.
Okay, I'll go first. Okay, if you guys want me to? Mm-hmm. So I think this movie's, you know, I think it's a very good movie. Great film. From start to finish, terribly depressing, and I never ever want to watch it again. That being said, I think it's like an 8.
Word.
Like, I think this movie's pretty fucking good, but it is sad, and you know, it seems to be very true to its source material. I don't want to talk about it too much more because here's the thing: it's not spoilery. If this is a true story, if you want to know what happened, there are plenty of things. But like, look, it's a good movie, and it tells a desperate story of survival. Mm-hmm. So it's an 8.
Yeah, I'll go next. This movie is very real, and there's something about a movie like this where it almost feels weird to score it, because it's like there's nothing wrong with it. Like I already said, it's made very well. There's a lot of care involved. So every step along the way of this, there's just something about it. With that being said, though, I'm in the same area as Roger. This is like an 8.5 for me. I can't really tell you why it's not a 10, but like there's something about it where, like, you know, a 10 is something you have to see no matter what. I think anything lower than that is, you know, hey, you should watch this if, you know, like if you don't mind watching depressing shit, mm-hmm. watch this. If you don't mind a little bit of cannibalism, watch this. Like there's always an if.
If you do not.
Yeah. There's always an if with this movie. So like it can't be that 10 because that's a must see. I think that's why it lands where it does for me. But like this is a strong movie no matter what. It was Oscar nominated for a reason. I can't believe this didn't win. Apparently we need to see the one that we missed.
Zone of Interest. Yeah, that's
all on Netflix. That. Zone of Disinterest.
This for me is a 9.
Okay, yep.
I really
the low guy at 8.
Well, here's the thing. And Chris, my first was 8.5, and I struggled for a few days with this. I really kind of sat down with my thoughts. But here's the thing with this is I think after sitting at 8.5 for so many days, one thing I really appreciate, and so many of my movies that I would put up against – there's 3 movies on top of my list that I would put up against any movie anyone puts on the table anywhere. Those 3 movies are In America by Jim Sheridan, I think 2004 maybe. Then the Namesake by Meera Nair. That's I think that's a 10. That's 2006. That's a Bollywood film, and Phenomenon for John Travolta from like 96. I'd put that against anything. But the one thing those all have in common is it's all just human interest, human dramas, people talking, people having real connections with one another, and that's what I think this movie has at its. That's one of the strengths of this film, and I think it's wonderful. Is it's so compelling without having any fucking car chases, any gunfights, any space battles. It's despite all of that, it's very compelling, and it's a damn well-made movie. Mm-hmm. So the reason I wanted to bring up J.A. or the director is he's done a lot of things recently with some of them with Netflix and with Amazon. As he directed some of the Lord of the Rings stuff from the Rings of Power, which I won't hold against him because that was probably put into.
I will.
The hurt I received from season 1 will never go away. But he also did the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And he also did Penny Dreadful. And he also did The Impossible, another one that's an impossible situation which people survive. That was with...
seems to be his thing.
Yeah, Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor. Another one that's like just a hell of a movie. So powerful. But this is a 9 for me. And Chris, I think you're also right about the... I just can't tell why it's not a 10, but it's not. Like, there's just something I can't...
They need more space battles.
No. Yeah. I think if an X-Wing screams by, you know what I mean?
It needed more cannibalism, I guess. No.
Jesus.
I think this movie did everything...
Double down on that.
You had to go there, dog? I mean, damn.
I think this movie did everything right. And it's damn deserving of the nominations it got. So this is a 9 for me. I was very impressed with this. So I'm glad we checked it out even late. I'm glad we checked it out.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, this has been episode 378 of For Love of Cinema, a movie podcast. No, Chris, you always sometimes you're like beep, sometimes you're like beep,
and yeah, thanks.
I never know where you're going with it. I never know.
That's the joke.
Keep me on my toes. Each new episode posts every Tuesday and Friday morning at 5 a.m. on the podcast service of your choice of the following 6: Apple Podcast, Podbean, Google Podcast, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And please note, they are posting on YouTube a little bit later. Just we haven't got a strict posting schedule for that, but hang with us. We will. Please leave a comment or 2, rate, subscribe. Every little bit helps. More importantly, thank you very much for listening. Check out the show on Twitter @LoveCinemaPod. I'm at Grayson Maxwell 1.
I am at Rod Stillian.
And I'm Christopher Bond.
Don't forget to check us out on Facebook. Always posting new news stories from the film industry. Check us out on YouTube and send us an email to fortheloveofcinemapodcast@gmail.com. And next week, we're taking a look at only Civil War with no B episode planned. Thanks again for letting me hang out for the dry. I appreciate that.